Welcome to Local Matters, Mountain Express's weekly podcast. This is news editor Margaret Williams, and I'm joined by senior news reporter David Forbes and marvelous reporter Jake Frankel. We have this week coming up for y'all a story about the state.
The state.
And local matters, local issues, the level of control that state legislators have over local things. David, give us an idea of what we got going on here.
Well, this has been a big issue this year. A lot of people don't necessarily know this, but North Carolina, unusually among states in this country, has just about absolute control, if it chooses to use it, over local governments, counties, cities, anything. And however, usually, while there have been some controversial issues in the past, the Sullivan Acts, which restricted the city's ability to use water back in 2005, immediately spring to mind. What you've seen this time is legislators, especially fresh Republic Representative Tim Moffitt, proposing legislation that originally wanted to take the city's water system away. That was revised to study possibly transferring the water system. Another one that would transfer the city's airport to an independent authority. Another one which passed dials back the boundaries of the city. And there's also been a lot of stuff at the county level too, including a very big change without any local referendum of how the county does elections. And a lot of these has been extremely controversial and raised the question about where the line between Raleigh's power and local government's ability to run their own affairs ends. And it's been a lot of very contentious issue, and we kind of go into it explaining, you know, how this, what powers the legislature has, which are basically almost total if they want to use them, if they have the votes, how it's affecting the localities, the city and the county, and how the city local officials and local political figures are reacting to these controversies that are going on.
Jake, you cover the Buncombe County Commissioners, who are all Democrats, incidentally, and they weren't too happy with this change in the election process.
No, they were all unanimously opposed to it, as were the rest of the local legislators, all of whom are also Democrats. And one of the things,
For Tim Moffitt,
of course, except for Tim Moffitt, who sponsored the bill to make these changes. And one of the things we look at in this article is the role of party dynamics in all of these issues. These changes became law May 19th. They were ratified. And what they're going to do is change the system of elections for county commissioners. Previously, we've had an at-large system, which means that all county residents could vote for all commissioners and the chair. Now we are going to a district election system where two commissioners will be elected from each district in the county. There'll be three districts, and they will correspond to the state house districts. Those districts are going to change very soon, though, as part of the regular redistricting process that happens every 10 years to go along with the census. And one thing we look at, we haven't seen the maps yet. We're hoping to get them soon. But we look at different possibilities for how, depending on those maps, how they change, how it could affect the makeup of the board and therefore the entire power structure of county government and therefore the public. For instance, what they could do, because of the way that the population of the county works, the city population is roughly around 80,000, which is about a third of the population. So I talked to Bill Sabo. He's a political science professor at UNCA and an expert on local elections and politics. He said the Republicans could try to encapsulate the entire population of the city into one district, and then they could have two districts which are made up of more rural areas.
And the city tends to vote Democratic.
Exactly. So that could potentially pave the way for more Republicans to get elected. Or another way they could try to do that would be to divide the districts in a way that would water down the more liberal city voters among the districts, again paving the way for possibly more Republicans to get elected. Interestingly, Representative Moffitt is on the redistricting committee, as well as Democrat Representative Susan Fisher, although the Republicans are really going to have the final say on how these maps are drawn this year.
Backdrop mention there, this is the first time in 100 years that Republicans have controlled both the House and the Senate in the state legislature. And so perhaps they have an opportunity here to change a few things, districting being among them.
That's true. Oh, and this is worth noting that this power has been, generally the practice has been that the entire local delegation, which would be three legislators in the House in this case, needs to agree on a local bill for it to advance. But Freda Bluestein, who is a professor at the UNC School of Government and talked to us about the powers and the history of these local bills that just affect one area or one city, says that it isn't always that way. And Democrats, too, throughout North Carolina's history, occasionally one Democratic legislator would put forward bills they thought were needed in an area, including over opposition of the rest of the delegation sometimes. And in very extreme cases of it, like in the early 20th century, the General Assembly would go in, sack an entire city council, appoint a new city council, and take all the property of a government and transfer it to the new body. That's an extreme case, but that's how far these powers from Raleigh can extend. That's actually got some local, local response. The city council notes that while they've certainly had disputes with Raleigh in the past, they said they always felt like they were much more of a process. Now they say that they were not consulted before a number of these bills were proposed. Their input was not requested, and that's been a major sticking point between them and Representative Moffitt.
And we're also talking some dollars here. There's, the water system, which is controlled by the city of Asheville, although it serves a broader area.
Mm.
Think of the Mills River Water Treatment Plant. A few years ago when that was built, it was a $30 million bond just to get that built, and that's paid by Asheville City taxpayers.
Yeah.
So that's perhaps one reason that the bill Moffitt proposed has now gone into a study.
It's become a study bill, and Moffitt, for his part, says that he intended the bill to start a discussion. He intended it to be a study bill. It is now a study bill. And he says that the city will be compensated. If this water system is taken from the city at the final result of this, it will be compensated for it. Moffitt, defending his actions throughout time, Moffitt has said that he thought the airport needs to be more divided out, that it is a more regional asset, that it doesn't need to have an independent authority. He's said that the city didn't consult him before raising water rates, so he believes he was justified in proposing legislation about the water system because he said it affects the region and jobs in the region and affects things at a larger level than just Asheville. And whether people agree with that or not, and many, many people do not locally, it is, he feels that he has somewhat of a mandate, obviously, to carry out these actions. And worth noting that the chair of the Republican Party, Henry Mitchell, has said that the voters in his party are still behind Moffitt and agree with most of what he's doing.
Yeah, I want to point out I spoke with Henry Mitchell as well as a few potential Republican candidates already. The election doesn't happen actually till next year, next November of 2012. But there's already Republican hopefuls kind of getting in line, hoping that these laws will help their chances of getting elected. But they see it as kind of a needed right to 140 years of the scales being tipped against them by Democrats. They see this not so much as rule from Raleigh as much as a needed adjustment to make things more fair for them to have a better chance of winning it and representing local people in the districts. It's also worth pointing out, though, that I spoke with officials at the North Carolina Association of County Commissioners, and the way this law was changed is really unprecedented.
It is.
No one there was aware of any changes to elections for county commissioners in any other counties in the state that hadn't been either requested by the current commissioners or hadn't been the result of litigation or hadn't involved a referendum.
And some sort of local input.
And this had none of that. It's also worth noting that the system they're going to is used by far less counties than the previous system. About 50 counties in the state were using the previous at-large system, and now Buncombe County is joining about 14 other counties in the state that use some combination of district elections and at-large elections. The chair of the commission will still be elected at large, and he'll be the only one that all voters in the county will still get a chance to vote for. Yeah.
And it's two of these. I mean, a bill drawing back the city's boundaries and undoing the 2005 Biltmore Lake annexation. That has passed. The changes to the commissioner elections have passed. While the airport and Water City bills have passed the House, they won't be taken up again this year. They've not, between the budget fights and everything else, the Senate did not get to them in time. But they can be taken up again next year in the Senate. It's worth noting also that talking to Emmett Carney, who's a Democratic chair, says that his constituents are real riled up about this. And it's worth noting that there are Republicans, between unaffiliated Democrats and Republicans. Republicans are, by a decent margin, have less voters than both of the other two groups in the county, registered at least.
Absolutely. No, and no matter how, you know, according to Sabo, no matter how they're going to divide up the county, the Democrats are still going to have at least a few representatives on the board, just because registered Democrats outnumber Republicans by such a big margin in the area.
Emmett Carney noted, and he said, in his opinion, the fight for home rule is on, which is a pretty big statement because Democrats have, in the past, in some cases, defended the ability to make local legislation. And I asked him, I was like, does that apply if your party gets back in power? And he says, you know, I can't speak for elected officials, but I personally think, you know, we've got to, the state has to have some, start having some measure of home rule to prevent this level of power from, in his opinion, being abused.
Mm-hmm. And he also seems to predict that there could be a backlash against Representative Moffitt and Republicans in general for a perception that maybe they're interfering in local affairs in an inappropriate manner. Well, interestingly, David, my understanding of what Emmett Carney seems to think also is that he predicts there could be a potential backlash of Democratic voters against not only Representative Moffitt, but Republicans in general.
And independent voters as well.
Independent, thinking that there could be a perception that somehow Republicans in Raleigh have inappropriately interfered with local affairs. Dr. Sabo, on the other hand, said that he doesn't see any kind of long-lasting voter outrage taking effect. He said usually with something like this, after the first or second election cycle, people really forget the change to the system, and they're just stuck in the system that they're in, and that really once the lines are drawn for these districts, people are just going to be set in that, and they're not going to really remember how they came to be.
It's just worth noting that, I mean, there's a local parallel, possible local parallel to some degree here. Or in the council election about 4 years ago, when the city tried to switch to partisan elections, there was a fairly considerable voter backlash, and that there was actually a considerable effort to get a measure on the ballot to repeal that successfully, which happened. And while you couldn't really do anything like that at the state level, or you couldn't do that easily at the state level, people can occasionally get very riled up about how their election system is done, or a perception that it was done without their consent. In that case, you had mostly Democratic council trying to change over partisan elections unsuccessfully, and they got an amount of backlash from Republicans and independents and plenty of Democrats as well. So, I mean, it's people can get very angry about the way their officials are elected if it's not to their liking.
Mm-hmm. But I guess the question now is how long will that anger last? Will people still be angry, or will they just find themselves in the system they're in and just go about voting under the constraints they've been given without thinking about how they were?
That's a big question.
In some other news, David, City Council took a few actions this past Tuesday with couple of things. Can you fill us in on what they did?
Sure. They had it was a fairly short meeting by city council standards, but they covered a lot of ground in it. They heard a report on the pedestrian bridge being reopened. It was reopened
in Hillcrest
about 6 months ago, and in Hillcrest Apartments, and there were a lot of predictions and fears at the time from mostly residents of surrounding areas that This would lead to a rise in crime. The bridge was closed back in 1994 due to concerns about crime and drug activity in the area. But according to the APD, according to the studies that have been done since, crime at Hillcrest has actually declined. And the police chief, Wade Woods, still said that they're applying for 5 more officers for the city's public housing apartments and projects. But yes, crime has actually gone down since then. And also the council had a proclamation. Proclamations usually don't make a huge amount of news, but in this case it was a proclamation for LGBT History Month. And it was unusual in a few regards. One is that it came in the middle of the month. Proclamations usually are the last meeting of the month before they take place, and June is LGBT History Month. And also that there's been a little bit of controversy about this because some of the actions the proclamation cites, the creation of domestic partner benefits and a registry, quality resolution that was had a very contentious meeting, but it passed overwhelmingly this year. All those are Mayor Terry Bellamy, who read the announcement, had opposed both of those and had very harsh words for the fact that those measures were coming forward in the respective meetings. But she read this. It was a proclamation acknowledging the contributions of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender citizens and the history that the community has in Asheville. And it was stamped with her seal and carried forward. And also there were former producers from URTV, which went black recently, the public access channel, in the midst of
the station shut down.
Yes, the station shut down in the midst of a big funding dispute between the county and URTV over funds that URTV claimed it was owed that the county is illegitimately withholding. The county claims, of course, they're doing no such thing, and the station was managed poorly. But in the meantime, the city is taking back the equipment and is about to put out a request for proposal for another entity to take over the public access function. And these were former producers coming forward. Dr. Milton Bird was one of them. He said that, URTV is not gone, that he wants to people sit down, the city and the county, and try to work this out to restore URTV. Christopher Chiaramonte had some much harsher words. He said that this was a conspiracy from the beginning. The county was engaged in conspiracy, and this was all URTV was meant to fail so the city could get the equipment. And it was a allegation that he made, and though the other producers didn't seem to follow suit in that. That issue still remains in the air, and there were a lot of feelings about that channel and about how it was run and about its closure now. So, but yes, there's a number of other issues that council took action on, and our readers can find a full accounting in the next issue of the Mountain Express.
All right. Well, thank you, David, for joining us. And that wraps it up for Local Matters. ¶¶